Where are you? The Whip Around with your hosts, Dave DiOrio.
Don't you stop me.
So to my question, you
did. This is my segment.
I am actually looking at Alton Brown's ambrosia recipe.
Sean Hayes.
That is totally it. That is a slam.
In space.
Words.
I'm the baloney man for Halloween. You just can't see it.
And Dr. Phil LaPorta.
No, this guy represents death and you're going to die. Like, that should happen. It's funny you say spewage. It's space toilets.
Oh!
A weekly look at news, current events, and pop culture phenomena, where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and nothing is censored. So it's the Whip Around.
The Whip Around is back. We are back in your living room or your car or who knows where you are, maybe even in your hospital room if somebody left something on and you're snoozing. Who knows? But either way, we are back and I am here once again. I feel like I'm being spoiled once again in the room, in the flesh, in the curling USA t-shirt. Dave DiOrio is here with me. How are you, Dave?
How do I sound?
I don't know, man. It's beautiful. It's silken.
Oh,
it's
dulcet.
Dulcet even.
Nice.
And so, this is my first time having Dave with me on the show since we tried to freak each other out with spiders and UFOs. So it's good to see that you're fine and well-adjusted. I'm fine and well-adjusted. We've got something special for everybody on this Earth Day. Am I right, Dave?
Yeah, it is Earth Day.
How did you celebrate Earth Day?
I didn't do anything for Earth Day today.
Not littering.
I recycled.
Thank you.
Maybe.
Well done.
If there was room in the recycling bin, I recycled.
Yeah, Earth Day for me is one of those like social media. Oh, right. Thank you. Yes. It's actually sort of a trigger warning. Like, remember, after Earth Day is Mother's Day. So things are going to get real very soon. So get ready.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little.
It's gift season coming.
Order the flowers soon.
Right.
But yes, on this Earth Day, which was not planned, we did not try to figure it out this way, we have a very special guest, and Dave is going to help us get in the pipeline for that. Yes?
Yes. All right. I'm really excited. This is a man who needs an introduction. So I'm going to give it. Welcome to the show, Mr. Paul Fidago, Communications Director for the Center of Inquiry. How are you today, Paul?
Hello, Dave and Sean. It is a pleasure to be on your very, very, what can I say, sophisticated podcast.
It
I
is.
Really appreciate it.
Did you wear your monocle? We all have our monocles today.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You issued me one before. You sent me one in the mail, and I got it. So that's,
synchronized.
It's dangling right now.
Synchronized Mr. Peanut costumes.
Excellent.
Yes.
And I guess the idea here when we were talking, too, before we even get into our peppering you with questions, Paul, number one, we have settled already off mic that it technically can be pronounced inquiry, as I've been doing, or inquiry. Yeah. So,
We're going to toggle. I think I'm going to be toggling.
Flipping and just keep
toggling.
On. Okay.
If you think too hard about it, you're just going to hurt yourself. So just, go with whatever feels natural in the moment.
All right. You know what? That's my philosophy on just about it. Certainly my philosophy with swimming
right.
And yes. So how would you describe, first of all, Paul, because I think this matters for everybody.
Yeah.
The Center for Inquiry, I mean, is it, would you consider this, it's an outreach group, it is a, it's sort of a many tentacled thing, right?
That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah, I often refer to it as a hydra because it's got like so many different heads to it. But what it all kind of focuses on is really critical thinking and science and reason over faith and mythology and superstition. So that is to say that we have two major branches, I would say, where we concentrate on atheism and secular humanism and church-state separation on one side. Mm-hmm. And on the other side is what we call scientific skepticism, where we're tackling things like belief in the paranormal, hucksters who peddle fake medicine like homeopathy and stuff like that. So you've got a branch of it that tries to be skeptical and think critically about these things that people deal with on their daily lives, people who fall for superstitious stuff or fall for, Dr. Oz and Gwyneth Paltrow's nonsense and climate change deniers and things like that. And then on the other side,
your basic government thinkers, right? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of this will sound familiar. And on the other side, you've got the incursions of religion, and in our country, it's one particular form of religion, into government and policy, and more broadly, some of the cultural challenges that especially more fundamentalist religion presents to modern society. So not just fighting Trump's band of theocrats that currently infest the White House, but also around the world, you've got countries like Bangladesh and Pakistan, where religion is used as a tool to censor and to crush political enemies. And you have folks who are like secularist and free-thinking writers and activists who get targeted for slaughter in the streets. I mean, you literally get people who are hacked to death by bands of roving Islamic extremists because somebody told them that this guy's on a hit list, so go get him. And it's, or you've got a government like Pakistan who are saying blasphemy is a crime. You've insulted something about the religion, and therefore you can be arrested and put on death row. Or in Saudi Arabia, they either kill you or they keep you locked up and do public floggings because you've defamed religion or something like that. So it's a big mix of things, but I think you can hear what it really focuses down on is looking for the truth for the betterment of everybody. And that's where the humanist part of it really comes in, is that it's not just about proving people wrong who we think are wrong. Like, it's like not, haha, you believe in aliens, or, you know, you believe in the wrong religion, you know, silly you.
Now you're getting personal with the aliens.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to, you know.
He said it's not. Take a shot. All right. Fair enough.
But it's about, it's solving these problems and getting people to think critically about the things that they take for granted and the things that they've believed without good evidence. So we don't want people to be wasting their money and putting their health at risk for buying homeopathic treatments, for example. And nor do we want, you know, Mike Pence's version of Christianity to be what dictates women's health policy in the United States. So it's all that kind of stuff. That was a very long answer to your question. There's an elevator version of that I did not give you, but I figured that you could handle it there.
Could you go into that now?
Round two. Well, and, you know, I'm sure that, first of all, a solid answer, and it's in how thorough that is. It does sound Hydra-esque, which is odd. We talk so much about, you know, geek stuff on this show, to hear someone mention Hydra, and it's not.
How do you not go?
It's not Red
Hell
Skull.
Hydra, right?
I know. Well, would you be shocked if Mike Pence came out, if Trump left and Mike Pence just stepped to the mic and said, you know, Hail Hydra?
I think that all the time. Like, I see them and I think they're thinking.
Plan executed.
Right behind the eyes there. I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel it.
Paul, if you don't mind, I'm going to use this opportunity to sort of cruise into the other questions I had for you. You've covered a significant portion of the, you know, the sort of, I hesitate to call it rote, but to get into the nuts and bolts of
what you
do and what you represent. Can you give us, broad strokes, a day in the life of the communications director for the Center for Inquiry? And, you know, I'm talking routine challenges. What kind of projects do you have on your plate?
Yeah, and I warned you it would not be interesting before the show, but I'll try anyway.
I dare you.
So the gist of my job is essentially – I mean, the name should tell you that I'm there to communicate what it is we are doing, and that means internally and externally. So on the one hand, I'm in charge of a lot of stuff for keeping our staff and our volunteers and our members informed on everything we're doing, keeping everybody who's on. I mean, there's branches all over the world, and there are all these programs and initiatives and campaigns that we're doing. And so we're trying to keep everybody up to speed and knowing what everybody else is doing. And that especially counts for like the donor class, so that people who have subscribed and understand what's happening and can see where their donations are going. And on the other hand,
I'm in that.
That's
bucket.
You. That's you. So, you know, as long as you're happy, then that's all that really matters. On the other side of that is media relations and press relations and social media and stuff. So reaching out and getting more people to understand what it is that we're doing. Like, on one hand, what it is that we're doing, so people know that, you know, we're trying to have this impact. And on the other hand is to educate, and this is the prime focus of it, is to educate the public about what these different challenges are and what we think are the best solutions to them. So we try to reach out to the press, and we try to reach out to the public to make sure that they know that Trump policy X is going to be very bad for the LGBT community, and because they're basing it on these, you know, outmoded religious ideas about either, you know, sex or gender roles, and they're basing it on their notions of, you know, biblical doctrine and stuff that has no place in government. And so we try to let people know about that kind of thing. We lobby about it on Capitol Hill, and we do activism at state houses all over the country. So it's happening all over the place. And we do it at the UN as well. So we have we've had representation at the UN Human Rights Council, and we do a lot of work there. So it's my job is to kind of get that message out as far and as wide as I can to the biggest audience possible. And that's, you know, and it's particularly challenging. You asked what some of the tough parts of this are. And as you noticed from the opening, is that it's not exactly a simple and quick to understand area of coverage. It's not like other organizations in our kind of sphere, like, say, American Atheists. Well, we know exactly what they're for, right? They're for, you know, atheists, rah-rah atheists. And that's pretty much what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's their focus. That's all they do. And everybody understands it right away. But you have a group like ours that is really trying to get into the nuance of policy and to get people to understand how certain attitudes and ways of thinking are affecting policy and culture. That gets a little more tricky to really make people understand why that is interesting or important. And it's desperately important, but it's not as easy to communicate. It's easier, I would say, when we're doing some of the skeptic stuff, because people are interested in UFOs. People are interested in health fads, or medical quacks who are, you know, peddling false cancer treatments or something like that.
Sure.
Those things, those are paranormal, right? Ghost sightings. So people are interested in that. That makes good, you know, human interest stuff. But we cover that on a professional level. We have Joe Nickel on staff, and he is the world's most renowned investigator of the paranormal. And he does it from a completely scientific standpoint. He's been on like countless television shows. He's written probably more words than anybody I can think of. And so like this is a serious pursuit on our end. So we can say we have the evidence, we've done the research, and we can say one way or the other whether or not someone's claim has any merit.
So
there's a group. Go ahead.
Is the thing, Paul, because I'm feeling this coming, and this is scandalous. Are you suggesting that nuanced critical thinking is not grabby?
You know, I don't want to say that outright. I don't, you know.
Is it not a headline grabber?
Headline, ghosts don't exist.
Crazy. Yeah, so you get it, right? I mean, it's tough. It's
sure.
tough to make that, you know, in a press release, for example, to kind of condense that into something that is a nugget that a journalist is going to be grabbing at,
sure.
or in a social media meme that is going to be compelling and viral. That's a challenge, and we're constantly trying to learn how to do that. Some issues are easier than others. So, like I said, the paranormal thing can be one thing. Opposing, you know, something that some, you know, lunatic in the Trump administration or something has said that is blatantly ridiculous, and we can push back on it. You know,
well, yeah. How often does that really happen?
Well, you know
day?
What? And actually, where that's a challenge is that it happens all the goddamn time.
Right. Well, I'm kind of curious, Paul. Has Trump been good for business for you?
That's a great question.
Ah.
Yes and no. Yes and no. In the sense that his administration has shown just how serious of a challenge that this kind of mindset can pose. You know, one of the things I neglected to mention, among all the other things that we try to promote skepticism about, is conspiracy thinking, right? So when he talks about global warming being a hoax of the Chinese, or when you're talking about like Alex Jones and the Sandy Hook and how that's a hoax and everything, and or the even more bizarre ones like the lizard people and whatnot that people seem to believe, represents a lot
They're
of
under
that
us. Kind
of,
they are under us.
I know, but you know that, and I know that, but. Trump represents, you know, I don't know if he believes in the lizard people per se, but he represents that kind of apotheosis of conspiracy thinking. And so that's right where we are, right? That's exactly the kind of thing that we are trying to push back against. But where it makes it tough for us is that there is so much opposition to Trump. People get so upset about everything that comes out of that administration that it makes so much noise that it makes it hard for an organization of relatively limited resources as compared to some of these much larger organizations like the ACLU or something. It makes it hard for us to kind of cut through that. And show where we have a very particular angle, that we have particular expertise that should be sought out and is valuable to the public discussion. And sometimes we're successful with that, and other times we are, I would say many times we are not, and it's tough.
It sounds a bit like being in one of those cash booth, the Wendy cast booth, where you guys are sort of like, look, we can grab at some things here, but eventually what's happening is this is just – a problem of blinded by opportunities now.
Yes.
That it's twirls and whirls to just sort of grab handfuls where you can get them.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're a nonpartisan organization. You know, we never tell people how to vote or anything like that. But there's just no getting around how Trump as a personality and how his administration has carried out policy that is – I mean, almost like bit by bit, it just hits right where we are. It's like it's the exact opposition to the things that we stand for. And so it makes it like that we just have to keep churning out. We once referred to it internally as we're doing all this fist shaking, right? And it's that the fist shaking doesn't do much, right? It's like we're always expressing our concern, right? But there's got to be something else there. One of the challenges that I particularly have is finding how our precise expertise as critical thinkers, as skeptics, as humanists have something to say about all these various things and picking the battles where we can really have an impact. And I would say that actually it's on the global scale that we have really started to shine with we have a program called Secular Rescue that we started back in 2015 when these killings in Bangladesh started. A man by the name of Avijit Roy, who is in Bangladesh, a very famous author and science writer, who had partnered with one of my former colleagues at CFI on some protests because atheist bloggers were being rounded up in Bangladesh and arrested and whatnot. And so we organized in coordination with this man, these worldwide protests against it. And it was a big deal. And then in the beginning of 2015, he was murdered in the streets at a book fair in Dhaka.
I remember this headline. I remember this story.
Yeah. And his wife was with him, and she was badly, badly, badly injured, like lost a finger and like had all these gashes and everything. It was just like this just horrific, horrific thing. And then it kept happening. Another blogger would go down, and then another activist would go down. And it happened. I think there were about nine that happened over the course of maybe a year and a half. And you know, it had the effect that the perpetrators wanted it to have. It was scaring the shit out of people, and people wanted to get the hell out of there. And there were hit lists that were being put out, and people were desperate. And so we started on a very small scale a thing where we would try to find those folks who were in imminent danger and assist them however we could to get them the hell out of there and get them to safety one way or the other. It isn't the same as, say, you know, lobbying the government of Bangladesh to take it seriously. They certainly were not and still are not. If anything, they were kind of flipping the bird at these victims and saying, like, well, you shouldn't have said all those shitty things about religion, guy. And that's essentially the attitude they took.
That's not so unheard of here, too, just with less extreme
incidents
that are being reacted to.
Like the lead, like, this is like there's the bloodstains have not been cleaned off the street, you know, where someone was murdered. And they're saying, like, well, we should probably check to see whether or not he was saying nasty things about religion before we get too involved in this. Just like horrible, horrible kind of things. And it's all it's politics, you know, because they don't want to upset certain sectors of their electorate there. And it's terrifying. But the point being, though, that even though we can't necessarily solve that on a broad scale right away, like we can't affect the policy of Bangladesh in any meaningful way. And we make all the noise we can at the UN, and it matters, and we can see things shifting, and we build coalitions, we build alliances. But what is meaningful is that we are also able to, at least for a few people, get them out of there, get them to safety so they can continue to do the thing that they do. They continue to write and to speak out and to live their lives without feeling like they go to the store that some guys are going to come with machetes and take them down, which was a totally legitimate fear because it was happening. So at this point, we've gotten the number is I'm not entirely sure about the number, but it's something in the realm of 30 or so people who and their families that we have either directly relocated or assisted them financially or diplomatically, working with various governments so they can get asylum or visas and things like that. So that's been a very meaningful thing. And, you know, from my crass PR perspective, it's been very good because it's something that people are very interested in. It's a compelling story. And so you can get some really meaningful press coverage out of that, that really tugs at people's heartstrings. And they understand the level of importance that this issue has. And then they investigate it further. And then we can do more because more people are getting involved and supporting us as a result. So that's been a good thing. It's an unfortunate, you know, it's a terrible thing to have to address, but it shows that there is a real meaningful and existential threat that certain forms of dogmatic belief can cause, right? This isn't like to say like, you know, a regular church going person in the United States is, of the same ilk. This is like the radical absolutist fundamentalist type of religion, and we can show that like this is what this engenders, this is what this can allow to happen when it runs rampant. And look who it's trying to take out. It's trying to take out the people who believe in church state separation. It's trying to take out the people who believe in evolution and believe in science. So, and it just creates a really stark contrast of these two very opposite worldviews. And you can see who the good guys and the bad guys are. You know what I mean? It makes it pretty stark. So, yeah, that's the answer to that.
Did I ask you
what was
something?
The question? I don't remember asking you.
Yeah, challenge. You're asking me, like, what's hard about it? Like, how do
no,
I get through
oh, right, right. I know. I have one other thing to ask, Paul, and then we really will need to take our first break so we can set. Yep. Because, I mean, that is an enormously important
heavy
block of text. And I hesitate to ask this next thing because it almost seems like I'm throwing.
You're gonna have to edit the shit out of this, aren't you?
Yes. But I want to ask this next bit.
Yeah.
And it's going to fall in the shadow of what you've just said, but I think it's still important. And then after this, we'll transition to break. I'm curious what your advice is on any listener who's out there who either comes into this discussion wondering what they can do, how they can get involved, or who's listened to what you've just said and says, okay, I want to, besides, you know, subscribing to the magazine and besides, you know, paying attention to my community. What would you advise people do to be involved with your organization?
Can I interject like kind of like an additional portion of that question?
Yeah.
Someone like me who, I do, have religion in my life, but I also believe that these things are horrible and shouldn't be going on. And, you know, again, your stuff about, ghosts and getting tricked by like snake oil salesmen and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there a room at the Center for Inquiry for someone like me?
Okay, you had Absolutely. To piggyback on mine. You couldn't wait and ask that on your own.
No, but it directly applies.
That's what I do.
And that's the tough part, because it's very easy to take an organization like the Center for Inquiry and say that's an atheist organization. I mean, most of the people who work there are, and there's a major branch of it is about secular humanism. But I would really emphasize the humanism part of that, which is trying to make the world a better place for everybody. So everyone can be more free. Everybody can prosper. And we do that by using critical thinking and science and evidence-based policies and things like that. That's where we're coming from. So if you believe in some form of religion and you're not intent on using the power of the state or violence to impose it on someone else, Dave. Then there's no problem there. You know, that doesn't mean that we can't disagree about certain philosophical approaches to things, but there's no conflict at that point. We're not in opposition, but we are definitely allies in that sense. We partner with religious organizations all the time.
Uh-huh.
We're doing our lobbying of the Hindu American Foundation, Catholics for Choice, the Baptist Joint Committee. These are all religious organizations, but understand the importance of of secularism. And I don't mean secularism in the sense of non-religion. I mean in separating religion from the machinery of government. And if you can get behind that, and if you can get behind the idea that people shouldn't get scammed, and you can get behind the idea that maybe we shouldn't fall into thrall over ridiculous claims just because we saw a blurry photo on television, if you can get behind that, then yeah, you're definitely on the same side as us, because we're trying to just make things better for everybody. There's going to be people who oppose that because they have some sort of dogmatic view, but we would never push somebody away because they happen to have some sort of theological view that most of us who happen to work there might not agree with.
So back to my initial question. That's a wonderful answer to Dave's piggyback.
Yes,
what
it
would
is,
you
actually.
Just say is a good first step for someone who does want to get involved with the Center for Inquiry in an active sense? Would you suggest,
yep.
You mentioned there's a conference coming, maybe that's an avenue?
There's a few different ways. If you happen to live in one of the areas where there is a local branch or a local chapter of the Center for Inquiry, definitely look them up. If you go to the website, centerforinquiry.net, you can see where our local branches are. Some of the bigger ones are in Michigan, Indiana, Los Angeles. And they are very, very active. They are not just like, people get together and once a week and argue about stuff. They are in the community. They are doing service. They are lobbying. They are helping to draft legislation in some senses. I mean, in some situations. So if you happen to live near one of those, that's great. Get involved with one of those. We're having a big conference in the fall. It's SciCon. So that's going to be concentrated on the skeptic side of things. And that's going to be in Vegas. October 18th is when that starts. If you go to csiconference.org, you can see all about that. Steven Pinker's going to be there. Stephen Fry will be there. So that's going to be a big deal.
All right.
I know. I can't even believe we got Stephen Fry.
Big names in there. Well, hey. I hate to sort of terminate the discussion on that because there's plenty
Kill
of
it.
Follow-up there, Paul, but let's use this chance to take a break, gather ourselves, and get ready to talk about this particular article. And I'll be honest, I'm already looking past our deep discussion into some really fun stuff that we have planned for the tail end of Act 2.
So, let's do it.
Lots of fun to come. Everybody hang on tight. We'll be right back after this break. You hear? Good. Be right back.
Who am I? Why am I here? What's the meaning of life? If you've wondered all these questions and more, have no fear. We have the answers. Or at least we'll give you our answers. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and the Twitter at The Whip Around. And if you want more than 280 characters, we'd be happy to send you a response email to your email inquiring further at thewhiparound@gmail.com. Think of it as free, totally unqualified therapy.
We return, and I wonder what everybody did with their break. I'll tell you what I did on some other show. We'll save it for a little bit of a secret. It'll be a little vault action later on. What did Sean do with the break? All right? You just hang on tight and just wonder. Keep wondering. Keep thinking. Now,
it was mainly just sitting here. That's the spoiler. We were just sitting here.
Why would you
we just
spoil
sat here
that?
The whole time.
You just gave it.
Just waiting.
Rosebud is the sled. That's what you did just now.
I ruined things.
You just ruined it.
I ruined things.
Well, let's plow ahead anyway, even though this whole thing...
We can't have nice cliffhangers around here.
This is all just broken now that Dave's taken us backstage, ruined all the magic tricks. So, all right, Dave, how about this? Let's see if you saw this coming. Dave and Paul, which we, of course, are still thankful to be with Paul Fidalgo, Communications
Hi.
Director for the Center for Inquiry, a.k.a. the Center for Inquiry.
Mm.
Just recently, researchers based out of the universities of Rochester, Virginia, and Utah, one of the only times you'll hear those, I think, three things just sort of lumped in conveniently together, they published a paper in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin in which they studied government services and religiosity, which is a band name that I am going to claim right now. Government services featuring religiosity across the U.S. and a number of other countries where they're looking for correlation of some kind. And the main findings, ladies and gents and assorted house pets, the more a government or any secular organization, but they leaned heavily on government, provides goods and services to a population, the less religious that population becomes. I'm going to quote at you here. Quote, if a secular entity provides what people need, they will be less likely to seek help from God or other supernatural entities. Government is the most likely secular provider, they concluded. We showed in two cross-sectional analyses, one using world countries and one using states in the U.S., that better government services were related to lower levels of religiosity. And we'll go ahead and drop the article in the show notes, of course, as we do. So listeners can check out the methodology there all you like. But the short version is that the team crunched numbers from data collection agencies, several of them, along with census and survey data. And all told, here's your next quote, Dave. I know you're excited for this.
Yeah, bring it.
They, quote, collected from 455,104 people across 155 countries. And I hope we're all keep writing this down. There will be a quiz. Actually, no. On this show, you never know. There will not be a quiz. But still, impressive numbers. It's nearly 3,000 respondents per country is what they were averaging with this. So let's just start there, okay? The notion is raised with this article, with their research, that if governments or other secular sources are providing for the needs of the citizens, instances of and the intensity of religiosity go down. And from both of you, I'm curious about your just initial short burst reactions to that information that I have just shared with you. Paul, do you want to tee that up first? Just what your gut says when you hear that information.
Yeah, my gut reaction was, well, no shit. But
all right, so Dave.
But I would say the less vulgar version of that is that, well, that completely makes sense to me. And we were talking before about the difference between like a kind of radicalized or absolutely fundamentalist version of religion versus something that's more personal and maybe more numinous and, you know, that isn't so directly affecting your life and how you want to impose it on somebody else. Of course, it means that if there's not – if you are wanting, if you are – desperate in some way, or if there's just not a lot of prospects for you, it completely makes sense that you are going to look for some other source for that kind of reassurance. And for millions and millions of people, that is absolutely going to be religion, and it makes perfect sense. It does not surprise me at all. And so when you are given more of those things that you need just to exist on a day-to-day basis from a secular entity like a government, you have the luxury of not feeling that kind of fear, of not feeling that kind of desperation to reach out to something that is unseen, right? So that this does not surprise me in the least. I'm actually just really glad to see it kind of spelled out so clearly and in such an exhaustive kind of cross-section. Yeah. So it was first no shit, and then it was thank goodness somebody said something.
To review, yes, to it, yeah. No shit. And all right, Dave. We'll just throw it out there. You've mentioned it before. Who knows what the edit will leave behind? But you did say that you have? Was that the verb? You have some religion, right? Is what you? I believe that's what you said.
Like, yes, I have some religion here in my bag.
I have a timeshare of some religion in Boca Raton. It's lovely.
We go twice a year. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you my knee-jerk reaction when I read the article was kind of, you know, a little bit offended. It's like, I don't have, air quotes, some religion to get anything out of it. Like, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know how to articulate that.
Well, that's your knee-jerk, whatever.
Like, yeah. I get spiritual benefits through my religion. Sure. I don't get something that, you
so
know.
You're personally, if you're offended. You're the, hey, this is, I'm bothered now.
Well, yeah, for me, as someone who, you know, I occasionally attend church, but I have my own relationship with God.
Sure. But we're talking the Judeo-Christian God here, right? You're some form of Catholic or Christian is your your flavor.
Yes,
okay. That's what he collects.
Right, that's what's in the God in the cupboard.
So, but I can see to what Paul was speaking about how it makes sense. Right. I mean,
yeah, and I don't, and desperate... I don't think it really I don't think it should offend Dave. You know, I don't think anything should offend Dave. I don't think this should offend Dave, or someone who's in Dave's position or believes as Dave does. I don't think that really applies in the same way because, you know, you're not in that particular situation. And also it's the difference. They say levels of religiosity. Right. And so what I don't, and now, Dave, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that you are out there proselytizing and trying to convert people and hoping that the government will do it for you, you know, all else failing, that there's a difference between someone who has a relationship with a faith and a discipline and all that comes with it and gets those benefits out of it, which I completely understand, versus someone for whom the religion encompasses everything and there's a fundamentalist attitude about it. And so I think they're not really talking about someone like you in that situation. I think they're talking more about the kind of radical, say the radical radicals in some of the Muslim world, or say some of the more radical Christians on the very hard right here in the United States. That level of religiosity, I think, is what they are referring to. But again, I'd have to see the actual study to know for sure, because I don't know how they're grading that. But I really don't think that folks who are in Dave's or something like that in that situation, I don't think that's what they're referring to.
It is interesting, though, of course, being, you know, when they're talking sort of about you, Dave, that your reaction might be, again, at the knee-jerk level, like you said,
right.
Hey, that's my initial nerve-ending, synapse-firing moment. Bam, that's what I'm feeling and thinking. Let me open it up a little bit. We'll do the same. Actually, no, let's invert the pattern because, Dave, I want you to feel comfortable.
Well, you know, it always comes back to how I feel. Right?
I want to pour some water on the embers here. So how to, and Paul, we're going to tee you up with the same question after this.
Mm-hmm.
But Dave, I'm thinking here, what is your hope about how let's keep it in the United States. All right. So what's your hope in how the United States government and religion are interacting, right? There's the idea of the wall of separation, all of that. I'm just curious on what you think you hope to see in, say, 5 years, it'll be like this. You know, I hope by 25 years, the relationship between, you know, the government and the church or churches is like this, you know, and maybe even like 100 years down the line, the hope is that the relationship between United States government and religion is like this, right? So something near term, something mid-range, and then maybe a hope for the future.
Well, I think that my hope for the future regarding religion and the government would be that the Republican Party in particular can disentangle itself from the evangelical pandering that they do to the far right, because the Republican Party
of which you're a member, right?
Of which I'm, I am registered a Republican,
nominally.
But you know, I don't,
right?
I'm not lockstep.
Let's goose step, I think. But I joke, I jest, I jest.
All right. Well, anyway, there's some core fundamental values, obviously, about the Republican Party that I appreciate, that doesn't need to rely on this far right extremist sort of ideology to win elections. I mean, they could do it on their own.
So by gradation, then you would maybe say 5 years, 25 years, 100 years, that process is initiated, fully underway, and maybe even done, and in 100 years it has in no way relapsed.
Right, and that way we can actually have a two-party system that debates actual
policy?
Yeah, why not?
I don't, it could work. I don't know. Paul, same idea here, if we can snapshot it as much as we can, you know, what's your hope? And I mean, again, keeping it to the United States as much as is possible, it's I know it's a little bit ham-fisted to pretend. Are you listening, Mr. President? To pretend that we exist in some vacuum here as a country, but just within the U.S.
But we're pretty darn impactful on the rest of the world, so I think it really matters, though.
True that. I merely say, knowing that it's sort of artificial in its construct, you know, that 5 years, 25 years, 100 years, what are you hoping that the relationship type, realistically speaking, of course, is why I'm saying
In the next five years, I think it's going to, I mean, whether I hope it or not, it's going to be what we're seeing, a lot more of what we're seeing right now, are these big, huge moves by the far right now that they've got a lot more power than they've had in the past 10 years or so. Really pushing hard, really trying to move the goalposts, and getting a real big response in a real big counter response. And it's going to be these clashes a lot. But
What is your hopeful side, Paul?
But put
these rose tinted glasses.
That's not necessarily bad.
There's no hope for the next 5 years. Put it that way.
Okay.
But,
wow.
But in the next 25 and in the next 100 years, we're looking at something totally different, because the demographics are simply just changing. That the farther down you go for millennials and what are you calling them now? Generation Z or whatever they're called.
They're all just Florida high school students. I think it's just it's the Parkland generation.
Very good. So but they are becoming less and less religious by a mile. And I don't mean by that they are devoid of faith. A lot of them consider themselves deeply spiritual and have lots of or unaffiliated.
Right.
You know, you might have heard the term the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, meaning the folks who are just not affiliated with any particular religion. Doesn't mean they're atheists or anything like that. It just means that they're not subscribing to something orthodox or traditional.
Yeah.
And so, but this is becoming the norm. Among the younger cohort, it's like a third are in that secular, unaffiliated mindset. And that just keeps on going. And so I think the outlook is really good to have that kind of thing as far as its incursion into government and policy. I really do think that that is going to be a dinosaur. Not soon, but
come 2118, perhaps.
I think we're going to see more of that. Now, what comes up in response, whether it might not be what we think of as like fundamentalist traditional religion, but maybe it'll be like the cult of Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, goopism becomes a big thing and everybody believes in that. I hope that is not the case, but I think the prospects are really good long term, but we have to get over this hump right now.
All right. So what we're really doing, I like that, is that we've got scorched earth on five. Like, no, I will give you this five back. That's not happening. Demographics is in focus for Paul, which makes sense as someone who's so into the weeds on the numbers and the data here. And then Dave, who's thinking about this in terms of your own personal experience. And again, one who hopefully is not feeling too much in the crosshairs of this discussion here. Like, we're talking.
As you just like blessed me, by the way.
Well, I'm gesture. I'm gesticulating. By the way, side note, I just wish I was more unscrupulous, because I feel I'd make a great cult leader. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I know how you feel.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like I know the moves, but I just don't have the.
It's like when you watch anything on TV and you're like, I could do that.
Absolutely.
I want to be clear. I don't think faith is going anywhere. I think that's always going to be part of the human condition. And I've actually come to appreciate faith in a broad sense, not necessarily in a, like, I want to believe in this particular version of one particular religion. But, you know, having a hope and an aspiration towards something better, that's sticking with us. And that's going to take a lot of different forms, I think. But what we have right now, as exemplified by the religious right or something like that, that has to decay over time.
Well, or that will, or we will, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, certainly we will. That's no doubt about that. But you asked about religion.
Right.
But civilization as a whole? Oh, no, we're going straight to the toilet. We're done.
All right, awesome. I told you it was a comedy podcast, everybody. So let me shift gears a little bit. We'll start again with you on this, Paul. We're all infected, and I'm sticking by that word. We're all infected with numerous social media accounts here. And I mean, like, as people who are, I don't know what the age limits are for any group, but I'm guessing by the time you're 16 now, right? Maybe that's even naive to think that it's not happening sooner. People are on Facebook and Twitter and whatever, you know, but certainly by adulthood, we're all on social media. So I feel confident saying that we all are familiar with the poisonous, horrible fuckery that goes on between people and the odd robot online. And so I want to make this statement, Paul, and then come to a question on it for you. I will say this. I genuinely believe that social media and I'm going to sort of generalize it, but, you know, it's Facebook, especially Twitter. They, for all their problems, are a huge reason for the rise, at least in the openness of skeptical thinkers out there, that the less religious populace owes something to social media and the sort of, you know, the more democratic, I know there are many flaws in this, but in the democratization of information, that you don't get caught in a feedback loop with what people think and believe. I think that social media is responsible for some of that. But I'm curious, you know, again, for someone who's far more involved in this than I, and I'll come to you too, Dave, don't worry.
Have a look of concern on my face?
No, I just... I normally do, Dave.
I mean, let's be honest.
I just don't want anybody thinking that, like, let's pick on religion or anyone with faith.
No.
So I'm curious, Paul, what your take is on the role of social media as a vehicle for discussions about faith, about secularism, and any bridges between those two communities. Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's been enormous. It is no coincidence that the kind of the real rise in coverage and understanding and discussion about from everything from skepticism to secularism has happened as the web has come into its own. So you can, especially if you consider the kind of early days of blogging to be the earlier forms of social media where people could finally find each other. Because very often you've got people who are either just not all that religious or totally non-religious, and they are alone in their communities or they're afraid to say something about it.
Been there.
And that's doubly so for places in like, you know, Pakistan or Bangladesh or something. So when you finally have something like social media and the internet to bridge these gaps here, and you can find people who think like you, then suddenly you're not isolated. Suddenly you are a constituency because you've all found each other. You can act in unison and you can debate things. So yes, the answer is absolutely it's been huge. It's also, you know, it's also fomented its, you know, destruction, as you notice that, like, just like you said, tons of fuckery. But to get where we are now, yes, absolutely. We needed social media, particularly if you include early blogosphere.
And I wonder if it isn't a bit like, and again, our side show that Dave, our show on the side, it's not a freak show yet, but Dave and I often do, or we're starting to get more into doing this side project of Sneaky Geeky Dads. So let me get a little sneaky geeky on both of you. I submit that maybe this is like Batman logic, to where the coalition of the free thinkers has sort of brought about the supervillains, the extremist right have then sort of answered the call, and they are the sort of rogues gallery to the at least passive understanding that some of us just don't believe, that there has been fuel thrown on the fire for people to respond to that with greater intensity of angry fundamentalism out there too.
Is that for me?
Well, I'm just saying it to both of you. I wonder what you guys think.
I definitely think that some of the angrier forms, or I would say not angrier, but maybe some of the more absolutist forms of atheism that have come about were, I think, a direct response to the Bush years and 9/11 and things like that, because these are examples of a lot of extremist religion imposing itself on other people, and it warranted a bigger response from the secular community. And I think it's not so much that the noise of the online secular community that has created a backlash from the religious right, but I think it's what I mentioned before, it's those changing demographics, is that they see how things are not going to go well for them long term. And so they need to get all the headway they can now before they just don't have the numbers to have the impact that they want.
I love the hope that I'm not being sarcastic. I love the hope that's buried in that. How about this, everybody? I'm placing a lot of faith of the secular variety in the sort of where that does seem to be going. So, Dave, I would call you a light social media presence.
Yeah.
LITE, let's say.
Oh,
definitely LITE. Not light, like a light bulb, not like a
like
shining
light.
Well, there's that too. You are a light social media presence.
Okay, there you go.
I'm just wondering if there's any perspective on all of that from someone like you who's less like, something happened, I have to get on social media about it. You're not an addict like some of the rest of us, and I'll be forthcoming that I tend to like overdo my presence on social media. As far as all of what we're talking about with here is this growth of a community of people that go, hey, wait a minute. We don't have to just believe the things that our community does or that our family does. And then there's a response from others who maybe come together in a similar way over here and say, wait a minute, everything's going to hell. We got to do something. You know, I'm just wondering what your take is on the social media presence here, whether it's a good thing, a bad thing, where you see the mix, which way it tilts.
Right. I think it's great that people can find each other, especially if you feel isolated, that there's other people out there like you that you can kind of communicate with and exchange ideas. I think that's awesome. The problem and the reason why I'm social media light is because I find that most of the time it's not very friendly out there and it's almost not worth the effort. And no one's interested in actually having a dialogue.
Stop being
about
so butthurt, Dave. LOL.
No, honestly, there's so many times I'm scrolling through things. I'm kind of more like a lurker anymore these days.
Nice.
You like that.
Lurker Dave.
But it's like, or I'll post something and then it's just like immediately delete it. Or because
it's not worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, I also think you kind of think about like what the circle that you travel in is. And the circle that I'm kind of traveling in right now is more on the skeptic side than the, you know, I don't know, theist.
Are you a pilgrim in unholy land?
I am. That is kind of no, not really. But but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like at least what I'm observing from, you know, my group of friends is that, yeah, the skeptics, I feel very comfortable expressing thoughts and beliefs and stuff. And I don't know. I just don't really want to get involved in it.
Okay, so I guess let me just press you on one thing about that, and Paul, if you want to sound off on this too,
yeah.
All right, you're a parent of two.
Yes.
And they're younger guys. These
we both are.
I'm parent. Well, you two are.
Right.
I'm a parent of
Truth.
One girl. But and so yeah, definitely sound off on this too, Paul. But you've got these kids. They soon will be entering an age where their social media presence is at least a possibility. So what I'm really asking is, are you more concerned that they'll be entering this filth-ridden, spectacle, meme-thick, I hate this, you know, this angry sphere? Is that your view more? Or are you at least in the sense you're like, well, they will be in the marketplace of ideas. You see what I'm saying? Are you feeling more, I dread their social media presence? Or do you see that as somewhere where perhaps they can engage in something and broaden their views?
Oh, God, that's awful. I think I'm knowing that there's no one or the other, but I'm just wondering
right.
which way you tilt on that.
I'm more afraid.
Okay.
I got to be honest.
Yeah.
More afraid. And that's as a parent of boys, right? I mean, that's.
Yes. Know, okay. Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Jeez. Paul, your thoughts on...
I'm definitely more afraid, yeah.
I could have answered for Paul, I think.
Okay.
But I will say, I'm afraid for myself. You know, I used to be like addicted to Twitter and I couldn't get enough of it. And lately it just makes me feel sick. So I have been turned away from it. So, but the only ray of hope is that we're not alone in feeling like, oh, this is a cesspool, right? Everybody's starting to feel that way, except for the people who are really responsible for the cesspool. So my hope is that as that becomes the normal and kind of the conventional wisdom that like Twitter and Facebook are a cesspool, that that's going to present the opportunity for new ways of doing this that are less riven with fuckery, so that when my kids are of age and they're interested in something and they want to discuss it with somebody, that they can, that there's going to be some sort of venue that is better managed and less abusive and more focused perhaps on that particular topic.
Isn't that the
maybe
dream?
That's what I'm hoping for. And also, you know, we're here talking about Facebook. I mean, I don't know how exactly everybody's age is here, but I'm 40 years old and, you know, Facebook is common for us. But the younger you get, they're using different platforms. I mean, even Snapchat is starting to age out and they're finding other ways to communicate with each other that suit their particular needs. And so whatever they have and come up with in the next 10 years or so might be entirely alien to us. And that is also scary because that could be even worse, but it might also just be safer. It could also be safer and suit them better. So I'm afraid, but I also know that this is not the end.
That's I like this notion that there we will be these dinosaurs.
Okay, we already are.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, I'm saying, but in retirement homes, screaming at each other virtually on Facebook while the entire vast majority of the world will have moved on like avocadotoast.com or whatever. And they're all doing the real thing. And we're shrieking at like 12.
In my day, we just used Facebook.
And we're screaming at each other on Facebook with the 15 other, like, you know, septicentennials who are just like, you're wrong. And they're all gone. Nice. And we have no idea. Yeah, that's a beautiful picture.
All right, Paul. You seem like you're still a pretty chill dude that I remember. I don't
yeah, I've only had
I'm
seven
not
heart
sure,
attacks.
I'm not sure I've ever really seen you fired up angry.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I tend to bottle it up and let it eat me from the inside.
So I want to see if we can make that cork pop off the Paul Rage bottle.
Yes.
Yeah, I would enjoy that.
Okay,
let's
do it. So
he's even nice about that. Sure, sure.
So
that sounds pleasant, fellows.
Yeah, we're gonna throw out some issues facing the secular and even some of the theistic population of America today. I kind of want to gauge your reaction. So let's use that bottle with a cork reaction. So
we're kind of going react, right? React, and then there's another one. Then react, and another one.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's get
Am
your...
I using a certain, like, is there a rubric here? I have to say the cork has popped or there's just some pressure building or...
Yeah, let's do like a fizz level. very fizz. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I guess you would say I'm unshaken, right? Like a, you know...
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, like flat water. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then you've got, what?
Fizz. Club soda, maybe?
Yeah, fizzy. Just like a little effervescent with rage. Effervescentwithrage.com.
There's no way this won't be entirely clear and understandable. That's great.
Yeah. Perfect. Totally. So then you've got flat, fizzy, I guess.
Uncorked.
Well, I would say flat, fizzy.
Shaken.
Yeah. Shaken and
the cork is popped.
Cork pop, right?
All right. Okay. All right.
All right. So here's the first one.
Okay.
Trinity Broadcasting Network and the rise of religious right programming like Mike Huckabee's self-titled show.
I'm going to say flat because he's just reaching the same people he always has. There's no it's preaching to the choir, as it were. So flat.
All right. Let me take a turn here, Dave. Trump vowing to, quote, get rid of and totally destroy the Johnson Amendment.
Oh, gosh. We're a little shaken. There's some shaking going on right there.
All right.
Yeah. That's because for folks who don't know, but should I explain the Johnson Amendment?
Yeah, if you want to, you'd probably be the best one to articulate that.
Very quickly. It's just a part of the federal code that says that if you are a church or a nonprofit entity, you can't endorse political candidates for office.
Right.
And so that just means you can't say vote for this guy or don't vote for this person.
Jesus says vote.
Right. You cannot do that. You cannot do that from the pulpit. Now, if you are a preacher or something and then you walk out of the church and you say, don't vote for this person, you're perfectly fine. So it just means that if you are essentially a tax exempt organization, you can't be doing that. CFI can't do it. So the Johnson Amendment puts that into law. And for some reason, a lot of folks on the very far right want to get rid of that because essentially they won't put it this way. But essentially what it does is it allows certain churches to become more or less political action committees for particular candidates because people can donate to that church and there's no accountability. It's completely invisible and they can just go and campaign for their choice of candidate. And so it's a big, ugly mess. And even like most moderate religious groups are against it because they don't want the government having to do anything to do with what's going on with them and worrying about who they're endorsing and who they're not. So the Johnson Amendment needs to stay. Attempts to destroy it are nuts. Luckily, they keep failing. So that's good.
He does sound a little shaken.
So,
Dave.
Okay. I think this one might do it. Okay. Kentucky allowing Bible classes to be taught in public schools inside the social studies curriculum.
Shaken because if they were doing like it's a religious studies class and we're gonna look at all the religions and it's gonna be great and like no problem with that, look at the Bible all you want then, but no, it's like one of these real just not even thinly veiled, like not even veiled attempts to just turn something into an indoctrination
class. Are you shaken or shaking?
Yeah.
Well, I'm shaking a little because I'm so excited to be on this show. Oh, but other than that,
All right.
I'm shaking.
Well, let me step in. Can I do one? Can I do one?
Do it.
The continued display of nativity scenes, Ten Commandments monuments, and other religious iconography and scenes on public land across the country, Paul.
Just barely shaken. Because it feels so desperate to me at this point. It just feels like it's a, folks who are already losing just kind of going like, oh, yeah, well, here's the Ten Commandments. and it's like, oh, great. Congratulations. Nice statue. That doesn't I don't think that they should be allowed to do that because it's an endorsement of religion. But it just feels kind of pathetic to me.
Okay. All right. This one could sneak in there, though.
Okay. Is this the last one?
This is the last one. In God We Trust, emblazoned on squad cars in police departments throughout the United States.
That's just getting the cork to pop.
High five! Nice!
Yeah, because we're not even like talking about like, the money or something, where it's just like, okay, that's kind of quaint. I don't know. But now we're talking about like the government having the monopoly on the use of violence, right? Mm. Or the power to arrest you and the power to decide whether your behavior warrants you going behind bars. And you've got like a theological argument behind it. That's not good.
It's a little like being arrested by the Swiss guard a little bit. Like, arresting me or have I offended God?
It's ugly.
So I guess we got the cork to move a little bit to strain the metaphor, Paul. I feel like I let the game down a little because I got you to calm down even, and I gained new perspective on how sad really the monuments kind of are. Like, okay,
kind of sad. Yeah,
if you feel better, then go ahead and put your Ten Commandments up. If that. Grandpa, if that works.
Now, if it had been something like Roy Moore gets elected to the Senate or something like that, if that had happened, then we'd be talking like the cork popping off, it kills a few people on the way, and it ricochets around and, damages property and stuff like that.
Yeah, we didn't want to get too ugly where we would get upset, like certain people reelected to office where it just becomes like, oh, Jesus, and we're going to be thumping microphones and falling over. Or like blasphemy laws or something insane.
Yeah, okay.
Rather in America, because unfortunately it's a real thing. So, Paul.
Sir.
Are you down, because I know my man Dave is over here.
Yes.
Are you down for a bit of an irreverent game?
I love irreverent games.
Okay. So we have verbal concession. We have an agreement here.
Down to an irreverence.
Yes. We are now at our irreverent level. So here is what this is. This is going to be, in fact, I'm going to do a little bit of an audible here and say that I will be choosing a winner of this game. I'm going to be joining a cult today, gentlemen, and it's going to be one of yours because we are about to play the Build a Cult Workshop. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we have now entered the Build a Cult Workshop. It's very simple. We go around 5 quick rounds. I'm going to give you a prompt, Dave and Paul. You're going to describe your choices for the cult that you're going to build. And if you're super convincing, you have the benefit of having this guy right here that you can't see, just aggressively pointing his thumbs at himself, joining your cult as your very first convert. All right? Are you ready, my chosen two?
So.
All right. We're going to start. We'll go Paul first, next round Dave first, and so on. Here we go. Round one. How did your deity of choice contact you about your new culty mission? A burning plant, a towering messenger, talking bit of toast, something else. How did your deity of choice contact you and give you the good word of your mission on Earth?
Oh, well, clearly it happened because of the smoke detector. It was doing that thing it does when you think that the battery is low and it's beeping at you and it's being a real pain in the ass. And so you go up and you try to fix it, right? And so when I did that and I pulled the battery out, the battery was glowing, some sort of like kind of purplish and green kind of thing. And when I touched it, it electrocuted me entirely. I fell to the floor and suddenly I had all the information I needed to save humanity.
Paul, have you been playing this game before? Wow. Like, is this your first time? Wow! An incredible answer from Paul.
I'm
just telling you what happened.
Dave might be in a bit of trouble here. Dave, same question. How did your deity of choice contact you with your mission on Earth?
Okay, I got it. You know those creepy NES games that weren't officially licensed by Nintendo? They were like blue.
The caveman
and they,
games.
Yeah,
at
and they
all.
Weren't like, but they were like religious.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah.
Actually completed one of those games, and the end game screen, since no one has ever finished one of those games,
Dave
actually
DiOrio.
Informed me that I am the savior.
All your religion are belong to us. Excellent.
I actually kind of believe that one.
Yeah, that's probably in there. Your next mission is not in this game. All right. Okay. Round two. Very impressive, gents, so far.
Yeah. I like Dave's.
Let's.
I'm going to join Dave's cult.
That is out of the question.
Nice. Oh, sorry.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Round two. Let's get a little bit visual here. Describe the uniforms for your devoted followers, Jensen. Dave, you're going first on this. Describe the uniforms that your chosen, that your followers will wear. We have flowing robes, some kind of specific sneakers, au naturel in the woods. What are we wearing in your cult, Dave?
Okay, I'll stick with maybe more of like an 80s feel to this. So okay. I'm going to go like fluorescent neon color mesh tank tops.
Wow. Okay. Any pants or is it just
pleather?
Okay.
I feel like that goes without saying.
Yeah. I think I can start to get some geography out of where Dave is going to base this. But all right, Paul, same question. Yeah. What are the uniforms for the chosen few?
Thousands of cotton balls super glued to your skin.
Oh, he has come to play.
You need devotion for that.
Yeah, that's right. It is not messing around here. All white cotton balls. We're going
all white cotton balls covering every inch of your skin.
Sort of Lakitu kind of walking
yeah,
cloud.
You know what? With goggles, with the aviator goggles.
And a fishing pole. That's
right.
Thank you for bringing up Lakitu. Thank you for raising that character.
Welcome.
I appreciate that all three of us know who that is.
That's right.
Yeah.
How about you, listeners? All four of you have got that, right? Okay. Round three. Going to Paul first on this. Hit us with your three commandments. What are the three most important doctrines your flock must observe? Are we talking thou shalt not use the letter W, virginity anytime you're outside of the boss's special tent, hour-long tambourine solos in lieu of meals, right? What are the three commandments that we must keep within your new way?
Okay. Well, commandment one is all meals must include a bowl of cereal. That is just obvious right there.
These cults are so friendly. Yeah, all right.
Commandment two is thou shalt not reproduce whatsoever unless you're going to reproduce 10 times over. So it's either zero kids or 10.
All
you
right.
have to make 10.
Wow.
Interesting.
If you're not serious about it, don't do it. Is what I'm saying.
In for a penny, in for 10 kids.
Yeah. And then I would say, gosh, the third commandment would be never pull off anyone else's cotton balls.
There you go. Ooh, keep your hands and your cotton balls
rule.
To yourself.
That's
yeah, keep those there, man. Come on. Have mercy.
Dave, this is a toughie. Paul did a great job fielding that very quickly.
Yeah.
What are your three? And you could have more down the pike, but what are your big three?
Okay, I'm going to go – we'll stick with the dietary restrictions. We're going –
well, that mesh you would want – yeah.
Yeah, we're going all Atkins diet all the time.
Like, it is
no carb consumption.
Religiously Atkins.
Allowed at all, right?
Okay.
So
your communion wafers are like – it's bacon. It's just bacon on the tongue.
Yeah. Or like a little steak tartare.
All right.
Glob.
I love it.
Next, I think to continue with the 80s feel to this, you have to do 2 hours of like some Jane Fonda aerobic workout a day.
I love this. Absolutely love the visual of your cult. Yeah.
And
it is members only.
It's going to be a very sexy cult.
I know.
Yeah, which is not me at all. But like, okay. I also think, like, since I need the strength to defeat the final boss or whatever this is going to be.
Yeah, clearly.
there needs to be some sort of I don't know, prayer to lend me power.
So many Dave, times. Like to.
Yeah, you have to offer up kind of like spiritually your strength to me.
Every day.
Tomorrow. Every day, daily.
You said tomorrow? Dave already gave me a deadline.
Like, cheat codes to Dave.
That's right.
Exactly.
Thou shalt keep the Konami code sacred.
Yeah. All right. Your own up, up, down, down.
That's right. Yeah. So who's going? It's Dave. Are you going first on this, I think,
sure,
right?
Sure, why not?
All right, round four. We're getting to the end here. What's your base like? Where is your cult housed? Are you a bunker person, tent-based wanderer, or something else? What is your base like?
Ooh, yeah. Well, we need electricity and stuff to train in the video game.
I'm assuming yours might be just a mall,
Dave. It's a Best Buy. It's the Magnolia section of the Best Buy.
Okay. All right. I would have predicted roller rink, but I appreciate that. All right, Paul, what is your base like? Where is all of this going down? Where should we head?
So the Lakatutians, which is what I've decided we are called.
Nice. Well done.
Woo-hoo!
The Lakatutians, they go to Denny's. I mean, that's just where they go.
I love that. Just a co-opting of like, remember?
They just take over Denny's.
Just go to any Denny's anytime.
Do you remember Denny's? Like, oh, I don't go in there anymore. The Lakatutians have totally taken that over.
Kind of mess these days,
Okay.
It's cotton everywhere. Yeah.
Stay out of the bathroom. It gets very confusing. So, all right. Last round. Are you guys ready?
Yes, sir.
Paul, I'm coming to you on this first. Uh-oh. The government is coming. You are about to be shut down and shipped out. What is your plan for the end times? For they are nigh. The government comes, Paul. What happens now?
Oh, gosh.
Lakatutians are about to be busted up.
Lakatutians are all going to get busted up.
It is the end.
Are going to talk to our secret allies, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, and we are going to have them launch us into space pods for our new colony on Mars.
Oh man, that's gorgeous. That is so.
It will be gorgeous.
That is that is such a like. I don't know, man. We're gonna send them. They want to go. Just off they go.
And most importantly, it has been foretold.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Right. All right, Dave. Here we go. They are coming. Black SUVs. They're coming. The music is going to get blasting. You know, it's time. How does this end?
Yeah, I'm thinking just seppuku, like right through the mesh.
Right through the mesh.
All over the place of commerce that we've resided in. Yeah.
It is.
Nothing to even absorb that. Just spills out.
So would you call it like the mesh rending? That's what it is. the mesh rending.
It's the mesh ending is what it is.
Yeah, okay. So wow, congrats you guys. Both highly successful cults.
Very fun.
I don't know who I pick. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put it out there for the listeners. We're going to put a poll up on Facebook to see which. Now Dave, what were you going to name your cult? We've got the Lakatutians. Mm-hmm. What's your cult name, Dave?
Oh.
Is it just the Zabkas?
Data West? I don't know.
There you go. You got like the Data West folks and the Lakatutians. We're going to put a poll up on Facebook. Whoever gets most votes, I promise I will join your cult and prepare for the end times, whether they be spacebound and hopeless or rending mesh.
I would be totally into Dave's cult, except for the fact that they killed themselves at the end. But, you know, if that were not there, I think I'd probably get the Lakatutians to get on board.
You know, if it wasn't for the madness and the death, this cult is actually kind of nice.
It might
be kind of nice.
There's good people there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate you guys playing and joining in on an exciting round of the Build a Cult Workshop. That is going to take us to our second break. Don't go away, everybody. When we return, it is time for a little bit of business, and then you know what? You'll love it. It's three for the road. So we will be right back with just a bit more time stolen from Paul Fidalgo, Communications Director of the Center for Inquiry and the founder and chief spiny thrower of the Lakatutians. We'll be right back.
Hey there.
still stuck in traffic? Going to the bathroom? Perhaps? Don't worry. We're coming right back. Make sure you flush and wash your hands. Especially if you're in traffic.
Hello, everybody. How are you? Have you joined any cults since I last spoke to you? Because I got two options that I think you might want to consider. Depends on what kind of clothing you're into. If you're a soft cotton person, I've got an option for you. And if you tend to be less is more in the shirt department, I've got an alternate option for you as well. We have now entered the final portion of our show. Before we get to Three for the Road, I would like to just make sure to mention to everybody, we've got a whole trivia crossover event happening next week. So not this episode that you're listening to right now, of course, but our next one on May 2nd is going to be with a local trivia master, comedian, and all-around guy about town, Steve Bost. He's going to be on our show that debuts early in the morning on Wednesday the 2nd. We will actually then be at trivia at the Bethlehem Brew Works that night. One of us will be co-hosting with Steve. And for listeners of the Whip Around, you will have a distinct leg up on a particular question at trivia that night. So again, we've got Steve, we've got trivia. It's going to be a blast. Paul, I don't know if you're going to be in the area for that, but if you want to swing on by the Bethlehem Brew Works.
Yeah, just hop on down from Maine. It'll be great. Yeah.
It'll be a great time. Totally worth, what is that, 6 hours? 6 hours?
Something like that.
Absolutely worth it is the position I'm going to stake out and refuse to budge from. So tons of fun happening. But while we do still have Paul Fidalgo, communications director for the Center for Inquiry, with us, he is going to be hopefully enjoying what Dave and I produce here with Three for the Road, where, of course, we get to talk about those things that we didn't have time to talk about during the show, didn't quite fit into the theme of the show. We each have 30 seconds to say what is on our mind, and after that time, you'll hear something like this.
Oh, dang.
He is
I'm already
back.
Messing up on
Dave, you're right out of the wild, wild west.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Quick draw, DiOrio. We'll be ringing that bell. That means you're done. It is time to move on to the next person. We volley that back and forth. Once we've each gone three times, that is over. And then we will hear some exciting ways that we can still be in contact with Mr. Fidalgo. So, Dave, are you ready? You're going first, correct?
I'm ready.
So, to channel my inner Mark Summers, on your mark, get set, three for the road.
Jay Feely. Do you know who Jay Feely is?
Yes, the football player.
Yeah, good job.
Hey.
Okay, anyway, he posts on Twitter the other day, wishing my beautiful daughter and her date a great time at prom. And he's standing there with her and her date holding his gun, which, of course, responsible gun ownership, use it as a prop.
Pointing straight down right near that dude's foot too. Like,
yeah. Oh, hashtag bad boys. So bad job on the joke, bad job on the prop, and bad job on the movie reference.
All right. I have seen a company with a technology breakthrough that I am in love with, everybody. The company is Yondr, Yondr. They're increasingly used for concerts, and I don't know how much it's in classrooms, but I just want to say thank fucking goodness for technology. It's a phone control system. You basically lock your phone up in a cute little magnetically locked bag. You open it by waving it in front of a magnetized post outside. Boom! You keep your phone at all times. You don't ruin life. Everybody wins. Yondr.
Twin Galaxies. You know what Twin Galaxies is?
Sure I do.
Yeah, they validate video game scores from like the 80s coin-op machines.
Okay.
Anyway, they have removed former Donkey Kong champ Billy Mitchell's high scores because the scumbag has been using an emulator.
Is that what that was about?
Yes, and King of Kong, which is one of my favorite documentaries of all time, Steve Weibel is now the Donkey Kong champ, so all of those scores have been erased, and Billy Mitchell is now banned from all his records, and Peter Dinklage, great portrayal of him in Pixels.
Jordan Monsell, the artist behind this amazing poster, everybody, King Country, that was just displayed in an exhibit recently, and now this poster finally has gone on sale on Etsy. It has 200 Stephen King references from the books and the short stories in this sort of sprawling, bizarre, ethereal outdoor scene. I got one already. I ordered as a King super fan. If you're a Stephen King fan too, go to Silhouettes by Jordan on Facebook or on Etsy and grab one of these weirdo, amazing posters. Good job, Dave. You're great. You're awesome.
Alexei Gershman is a postal worker in Brooklyn, New York. Uh-oh. And dude stashed and dumped 17,000 pieces of mail instead of bringing them to the right addresses because he was overwhelmed with work. I personally think he is an American hero. Stop delivering the junk mail. Stop cluttering my mailbox, but it's a total Newman move, and
yes,
it's so appropriate that it happens in New York.
Yes, it is. All right, I just want once again to voice my disgust and my anger over Pennsylvania's repressive laws about alcohol sales, liquor sales, because not only do we have to deal with the state store system being involved in liquor stores and sales, we're also not allowed to have liquor bought and mailed to us. We are not allowed to order wine, order spirits. We're not allowed. If they get it to you, it's actually illegal. And so I just want to know when, as a taxpayer and law-abiding citizen, I'm allowed to get a certain kind of liqueur that I like. It's walnut flavor. And it's amazing. I'm not allowed to have it unless I want to do a trek out to Jersey. And sometimes I don't want to drive to New Jersey. No offense, Dave. No offense, Paul.
Walnut absinthe?
No, it's walnut liqueur. It's I forget what it's called. I'm usually whatever. It's really good, and I really like it, and I never get what I want because Pennsylvania can't get its shit straight about liquor.
Dude, I literally get told at the grocery store, go drop it off in the car and come back because you can only remove so many ounces.
It's asinine.
Has your cork popped?
Yes. And I'm not even allowed to see where it happened because I'm not allowed because it's Sunday night and it's probably illegal for me to even mention that my cork popped. Actually, that's probably within some yards of a school. I can't anyway. But you get the point. Very upset.
Good job, Sean.
Good job, Dave.
Thanks.
So, okay. That's been three for the road, everybody. As usual, tempers are flaring and smiles and sadness, and it's all happening right here. It's a veritable tattoo of a comedy tragedy mask just all over our faces here. So let's class it up a little bit because, again, let's turn things to Paul Fidalgo. Number one, Paul, from Dave and myself, thank you for joining us and being so open and so generous with your time and the information.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's been a really good time.
Yeah, for us, too. How can people maintain their contact with you and your work and your, you know, the Center for Inquiry itself? Where can they go? How can they, once they've obviously been impressed by what you have to say here?
Because they're so compelled. Yes.
Yeah,
so Center
where can
for Inquiry, they go? Very simple. Center for Inquiry or Center for Inquiry if you're nasty. Centerforinquiry.net is the website there, and that's you're going to find all the other stuff branching off of there. I host the podcast there, Point of Inquiry, which is at pointofinquiry.org. It's been in a little bit of a hiatus for a few months because of things, but it will be coming back, and so I definitely recommend you go check that out. If you want to see more of what I am personally doing, you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Fidalgo, or check out my stuff on Medium. I would really appreciate you check out my writing on Medium, which is medium.com/@Paul Fidalgo. Oh, also, I was recently published in the latest edition of the Dark Mountain Literary Book, and one of my essays is in there, and I'm really excited about that. So go check out dark-mountain.net.
That's awesome. Again, he has been generous with where we can contact him as well.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot to say.
Well, Paul, we hope you might consider at some point in the future coming back on the show and having some fun with us once again. It's an open invitation.
It would be my pleasure.
It has been, again, an embarrassment of riches here for us to just get through and think about all that you gave us, even in Act 1.
Yes, indeed.
So this has been informative. It has been fun. It has been amazing. And
you
know
what? Anybody's head.
That's right. That's right. And you know what, listeners? You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay. So we are going to sign off here because there just aren't enough hours in the day to cover everything we want to cover. If you have questions for us, please send them along to thewhiparound@gmail.com. Send them to our Facebook account. Heck, ask them on Instagram or Twitter if you like. We can pass along anything specific you have to Paul. Paul, are you open if we have some listener questions to maybe pass in some information back to us and field
them? Definitely. Absolutely. Be glad to.
All right. Appreciate it. See how generous he is, you guys and gals.
I'm the best.
Why can't you be more like Paul, Dave, and everyone else?
I try. Every day I try to be
world.
More like Paul.
Walk like Fidalgo.
And other Lackatutian.
That's right. Be a Lackatutian. Be there or be covered in cotton balls.
My spiky balls ready to throw at you.
Amen. Finally, Dave. I've been waiting for you to say that all episode. So, Paul, appreciate it. We hope that you'll join us again soon. Listeners, the same goes for you. So I would just like to end this by reminding everybody that no matter what you believe, no matter what you hold dear, We love you. Bye.
Best we ever did it, guys.
Woo! See you later, all.
You know, if it wasn't for the madness and the death, this cult is actually kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah.